This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can listen to this show on Pacifica radio stations and watch our show on Free Speech TV. 31-year-old Myra Machado is a typical American woman, mother of three, who was working in the field of patient care. But because she's not a U.S. citizen, she's been imprisoned in a detention center in Louisiana for the past year and could be deported to her home country of El Salvador. Her crime? An unpaid traffic ticket. While President Obama has assured us that the only undocumented immigrants being deported under his watch are violent criminals, Myra Machado's case belies that claim. Her children and family have been on a relentless quest to free her and stop her deportation. Now, if this is what immigrants are facing under Obama, what is to come under Donald Trump, who made targeting immigrants a central plank of his election campaign? Joining me to help answer that question, as well as discuss Myra's case, is Olga Tomchin. She is the Deportation Defense Coordinator and a staff attorney for the National Day Laborer Organizing Network. She's working on Myra's case. Welcome to the program, Olga.
Thank you so much for having me, Sonali.
So let's get a little bit more in-depth into Myra's case. She's a mother of three, 31-year-old. We don't know much else about her other than she's from El Salvador. What can you tell us about this woman in terms of when she came to the U.S., how long she's been here, and why is it that she's in detention?
Sure. So Myra was born in El Salvador, and she and her mother immigrated when Myra was about 5 years old. They came fleeing the civil war in El Salvador. So Myra grew up in Santa Ana, Orange County, and then when she was about 18 years old, she moved to Arkansas. Her mom had moved to Arkansas when Myra was much younger, so Myra was actually raised by her grandma. So Myra had felt abandoned by her mother, and they were reconnecting and living together for the first time when Myra was 18, and she was, you know, experiencing a lot of trauma and tumultuousness, and like many teenagers do, she got into some trouble and cashed some bad checks and ended up getting fraud convictions for those bad checks when she was 18. So she was sentenced to 4 months in boot camp for young people who had gotten in trouble for the first time. She did her 4 months in boot camp in Arkansas, and it was a big wake-up call for her, and she never looked back, basically. She lived a really, you know, normal, typical life where she only got in trouble for traffic tickets. And she had three kids. She was raising them as a single mother, and then she was working at an optometrist's office, helping with post-surgical care, really loving her life. She had a house, she had a car, a BMW. She was just really happy, had a really big community in Arkansas. So then about exactly a year ago, Myra was driving with her three kids in their car to go buy a Christmas tree when a police officer pulled her over and told her he pulled her over because she looked suspicious. And Myra can't imagine what else that could have been other than her being a Latina mother with three kids driving a BMW. Hmm. There's nothing. The cop literally said, like, you looked suspicious. So he did a warrant check for her after he pulled her over and found that she had an unpaid parking or an unpaid traffic ticket, a failure to yield. So he arrested her for the unpaid traffic ticket in front of her kids, but said that she could go to the station and just pay the ticket. So she, you know, was ready, thought that was going to be it. She goes into the police station, and the county where she is in Arkansas, Washington County, it's a 287G county, which means that the local police are deputized by ICE to work as immigration agents. So one of the police officers who's deputized by ICE looks at Myra, profiles her because she's visibly Latina, and pulls her aside to interview her and tells her she doesn't have a right to stay silent, that she has to answer his questions about her immigration status. So as a result of that, they put an ICE hold on her, which means that even though she has no charges pending, no charges were filed against her, you know, they didn't even let her pay the ticket. They kept her from Saturday until Thursday when they transferred her to ICE custody, and they took her then to this private for-profit immigration detention facility in rural Louisiana where there's a history of people dying of medical neglect. And the one other really tragic part about Myra's story was that she had, you know, recently fallen in love and gotten engaged and she had been pregnant, and then she lost the baby just 2 weeks before she was detained. So she was still bleeding, her body was still recovering, she was still really emotionally traumatized from losing her baby, and then all of this happened. And so she's been detained for a year. Her kids have had to move in with their grandmother. They've been really suffering. They've had to go to therapy. Myra's relationship with her fiance broke down. Her entire life has really been falling apart, all because of this racial profiling that happened. And they're claiming that she needs to be deported because she got in trouble when she was 18. And Myra's big concern is that all of this happened before her kids were born. Her oldest is 11. Like, why are her US citizen children suffering because of Myra making a mistake when she was a teenager and her already serving her time for that?
So basically, here's a woman who's 31 years old now. At 18, she cashed some bad checks. And for that, the US government wants to separate her from her three US citizen children and send her back to El Salvador, a country that she probably doesn't know very much about
No.
because you said she left when she was five.
Yeah, she has
That's.
no family there. She has no family there. She doesn't know a single person in El Salvador. And as you know, El Salvador has one of the highest murder rates in the entire world, and especially really high rates of femicides. So women are particularly targeted, and she's very, lively and outspoken. She's a fighter. That's why she's been fighting her case for so long. So she's really, really afraid of what will happen to her if she is deported.
So she is, I mean, how does she meet this criteria that the Obama administration says it follows when it aggressively pursues cases for deportation? Violent criminals, you know, we are basically led to believe that we're only deporting like rapists and murderers.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the Obama's whole rhetoric about deporting felons, not families, is really dangerous and wrong in so many ways. It creates this double standard of double punishment for non-citizens, where, President Obama has, at least in rhetoric, talked so much about fighting mass incarceration, fighting criminalization of communities of color and profiling of communities of color. But then when it comes to non-citizens, you get no second chances. You're seen as disposable. So Myra, she had temporary protected status, so she did have a form of immigration protections before she got in trouble. So getting into trouble as a teenager, that's enough to make you permanently disposable in the eyes of the government. So in terms of the government's priorities, in terms of Obama's priorities, having any kind of felony conviction, even any kind of serious misdemeanor, such as a DUI, can mean that you are a top priority for deportation. And having three minor misdemeanors is enough to be a top priority for deportation. So over and over again, we've really pushed for ICE to exercise prosecutorial discretion, because Myra, like I said, is the primary caregiver of three young US citizen children who really need her. And so we've been pushing that and pushing that. But then we discovered, and they kept saying no. And it was very confusing because they kept referring to her as a hardened criminal and saying that she had like a long criminal history. And it was very confusing for me. And I talked to people at every level of ICE, from her deportation officer up to people at ICE headquarters, and they kept repeating the same talking points. And then just a few days ago, we realized, after they sent a statement to NBC referencing Myra's alleged drug conviction from 2015. And I was like, wait a second, that's not true. She definitely doesn't have a drug conviction, and certainly not from last year. So we dug into the ICE records and found out that the ICE records had actually included information not just from Myra, but from a man named Juan Garcia, who presumably was detained with Myra, or who was jailed with Myra at the same time at the Washington County Jail. And because the actual records refer to Myra with male pronouns, and they list her height as being 5'9" when she's actually 4'11", she's a very tiny person. And we looked into the case number that they had listed for the drug conviction, and it was for this man named Juan Garcia.
So
So I.
there was paperwork error, and that's why they consider her a hardened criminal?
Yes, exactly.
They mistook a man for a woman.
Yes. They mistook a 5'9" man for a 4'11" woman.
With completely different names.
Yeah, totally different. I went through with Myra line by line the entire like ice rap sheet that they had for her, and there were so many mistakes. So, for example, it said that Myra was in good health when she was booked, when she had just had a miscarriage, was told them that she was still bleeding and in pain. They said she wasn't afraid to go to El Salvador when she's clearly been saying she's been afraid from day one. You know, the height was different. There's all this stuff that's totally different. So yesterday morning, I filed a complaint with the Department of Homeland Security Civil Rights and Civil Liberties Division, demanding that they do a thorough investigation into how this happened, like how this, you know, really appalling mix-up happened, and how it impacted her case. Because, you know, throughout the process, they made a determination of whether to keep her detained or to release her. They denied her prosecutorial discretion request twice. They denied a stay of deportation, which basically like a pausing her potential deportation. They denied all of this, ICE did, based on her criminal history. And I was like, wow, they're being really, really harsh. This is so ridiculous. And now I'm starting to understand it's probably because of Juan Garcia. So we're demanding that they investigate. We're demanding that they do not deport her while the investigation is happening. And also, Myra really is concerned that other people may have been impacted in the same way.
Right. I
So,
mean, because she has the legal support of your
exactly.
organization, you're able to uncover this. How many other undocumented immigrants might have been victims of paperwork errors and just
Now,
been deported? Wow.
this actually isn't even the first time that I'm seeing this with a case I'm working on. A year ago, we did a campaign for this grandfather who they had raided his house and put him on a deportation bus to Tijuana, and we got it to turn around. But we then, when local Spanish news did coverage of the story, ICE issued a statement saying that the grandfather had been convicted of, you know, felony domestic violence causing grave bodily harm. And this was just not true. It was not true at all. So I sent a cease and desist letter for defamation, and they looked into it and they realized that they had mixed up the names. They didn't re
Wow.
they because you know, a lot of people with Spanish names have two last names, and the first name and the first last name were the same, but the second last name was different.
It's still no
And they were like,
excuse,
oopsies,
obviously.
oopsies. And
Right.
that's
Okay, so
I said no.
how typical is Myra's case, not just in terms of the mix-up, but more so in terms of the harshness and this idea that you know, felons not families is not really true. I know that Endelon, your organization, has worked to raise the profile of several undocumented immigrants that are being wrongly deported.
Yes. So, I mean, our perspective is that all deportations are wrong. You know, everyone's deportations are wrong. And the problem with felons not families is that, again, it creates this total double standard for immigrants, and it creates a sense of double punishment for non-citizens. So, for example, if a citizen gets a DUI, and I'm sure that many of us have a friend who's gotten a DUI, and we obviously don't want people to drive while intoxicated, but it's a common thing that happens. So if a citizen gets a DUI and no one gets hurt, then likely, you know, they'll pay a fine, maybe spend a night in jail, have to take classes, maybe lose their license for a little bit, that's it. But if a non-citizen gets a DUI, then they end up being, you know, torn away from their homes, having their lives completely destroyed, and being banished from their families. It's just such a really dramatic, harsh overpunishment. And it's the same thing with Myra is a great example where, you know, the state of Arkansas, which isn't exactly known for being very lenient or progressive on criminal justice issues, they thought that her convictions warranted her to spend 4 months in boot camp when she was a teenager. That's it. But now she has spent a year. So that's 3 times longer in immigration detention over these convictions than she spent in boot camp. So it's really a form of double jeopardy, you know, not in exactly the legal sense, but really like double punishment for the exact same crime just because
Right.
of a person's immigration status.
So
So we're really pushing that if, you know, if immigrants are put in deportation proceedings because of past convictions, that means that they have already served their time. You know,
Right.
that's exactly what that means. So it's wrong that immigrants are held to these really disproportionate standards, and that people's community ties and are just totally ignored. There's, you know, ICE is supposed to look at like weighing all of the equities, weighing at the person's ties to community, weighing, you know, how they would suffer if they were deported, how the family would suffer if they were deported, and they just don't do that.
So,
we don't see that.
Olga, what needs to happen specifically on Mayra's case right now?
So she unfortunately did not have a good lawyer the first time around. This is sadly all too common in immigration law. And I really advise anyone watching at home who gets put into any kind of immigration proceedings to really make sure that they have a good lawyer, because there are so many people who end up taking your money and then not doing the work that they say they're going to do. So Mayra's original lawyer, despite having a contract saying that he would apply for asylum type protections for Mayra, did not do that. He did not apply for her strongest claims. So she lost her case at the immigration judge and at the Board of Immigration Appeals levels. And then we got a new lawyer for her named Dana Wheatley, who's really excellent, who's been really putting in long hours for Mayra. And she filed a motion to reopen based on ineffective assistance of counsel, basically saying that Mayra did not get the constitutionally necessary representation in the first round and that her asylum case needs to be heard because it has not been heard yet.
So we'll post some of that information on our website. I want to spend the last few minutes, Olga, of our conversation talking about what to expect under a President Trump. I mean, if this is the kind of thing that we've been talking about with Mayra's case happening under Obama, Trump, who has promised to deport millions of undocumented immigrants, promised to undo DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, one of the most positive things, or perhaps the only positive thing that Obama did on immigration, what is to happen? Let's talk first about DACA. I understand 700,000 plus young immigrants registered under Obama's program, trusted the government. Now, when that program expires, as Trump will probably let it, they have all the contact information, names, addresses, et cetera, for these people?
Yes. So it's definitely very frightening. We don't want to, you know, unnecessarily cause panic among people. I personally think it's doubtful that they are going to go after DACA recipients, you know, at least in any kind of first round. I don't think they're going to be the first people that are gone against. Organizations that work a lot on DACA have been advising people who have not applied for it before to not apply now. So if it's your first time applying, don't apply. Hold off. But people who are up for renewal, they might as well apply to renew. You know, maybe if they get their work permits issued in time, that maybe those won't be canceled. But it's definitely very frightening. But in a kind of the flip side of the felons not families thing is that there is a lot of political capital that these young immigrants who do not have convictions often do have.
Referred to as dreamers, yeah.
Yes. A lot of people don't like that term anymore, but yeah, the traditionally known as dreamers. So I know that, for example, Lindsey Graham announced, I believe yesterday or the day before, that he's planning to put forward legislation in order to protect people who have been DACA recipients.
And this is pretty impressive. This is a Republican member of Congress, you know, doing the right thing, it seems.
Yes, definitely. But we do fear, you know, obviously we want people to be protected as much as possible, but we fear having people with DACA being pitted against people with convictions like Mayra, or, you know, recently arriving refugees who are the biggest amount of new immigrants, people fleeing violence in El Salvador and Guatemala and Honduras. We really are afraid of them trying to make some kind of, you know, devil's bargain and saying like, oh, okay, we'll protect the dreamers, but, you know, screw the refugees. And that's really what the Obama administration tried to argue with their harsh enforcement, what their really harsh treatment of refugees, especially women and children refugees, by putting them in family detention centers. They were saying, oh, well, like, we need to do this to be strong at the border in order to protect DAPA, you know, the deferred action for parents that they had announced that was, you know,
that never went into effect, sadly.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So we that's why we've really don't want the immigrant community to be divided, and that we all really need to support each other and fight for each other and fight attacks on the entire community.
The California Democrats, many California Democratic Congress members have now asked President Obama to pardon DACA recipients. I mean, of course, what's different about DACA recipients, those who've registered, is that they've essentially been outed to the government. So now they went from being the least vulnerable undocumented immigrants to being potentially the most vulnerable undocumented immigrants. So the Obama administration has retorted saying it can't pardon them because immigration violations are civil offenses, not criminal ones. Interestingly enough, they don't apply that same standard when they talk about imprisonment. People shouldn't be locked up for civil offenses, but somehow that distinction is all right. What do you make of both the call by California Democrats and Obama's response?
So there have been a lot of different kinds of calls for pardons across the board. So I think one of the other ones that I saw was pardoning people who have green cards, who have past convictions, because that is something that they could actually, that the president could do. It's difficult because you can't, you know, it's hard to, the president can't executively grant some form of, you know, real immigration status, you know, like he can't put people on a road to citizenship or anything like that. So that, and it could be something that could be easily undone by Donald Trump. So I think that the president should figure out how to use his pardon powers to the widest extent possible. And that should really include all immigrants with convictions. As you know, Obama has built up this massive deportation machine that is bigger than it has ever been in the past. We're detaining more people right now in these civil detention centers than ever in history. It's been ramping up toward the end of the Obama presidency. So in Myra's detention center, she's been reporting that people, and I've heard this report from many people, that people have to sleep in the courtyard. Like that people are having to sleep on the floor because it's so overburdened, because they're detaining so many more people than they even have capacity to. So for us, it's really disturbing that Obama is building up this giant deportation machine and then handing it to Trump. So he needs to be doing what he can to dismantle it at all levels, whether it's pardons, whether it's mass prosecutorial discretion, which is kind of similar to pardons, whether it's, you know, ending the contracts of the private detention facilities. All of this stuff is things that Obama could do, and he still has time to do.
Right. I mean, he has nothing to lose at this point. No. You know, it's like it used to be, the excuse was, if we are tough on enforcement, the Republicans will then see that as an olive branch and they'll come through. That didn't work. We never got comprehensive immigration reform. Now he has nothing left to lose except his legacy. He has the time to turn around his legacy and unearn the name of deporter in chief. But
absolutely,
time's running out.
I really am trying and hoping that Myra can become the poster girl of what Obama's deportation legacy is. You know, she is the perfect example of the total moral bankruptcy of felons, not families, and the really devastating impact that the deportation system and detention system have on entire communities. So there's still time. We have a petition for Myra. We also have been asking people to call in to ICE, so I can pass along that number so you can post it. We are really pushing and telling them that they must release Myra, that they have to exercise prosecutorial discretion, that the community demands it. And we remain cautiously hopeful.
And so all of that information, I'm assuming, is on your website, endelon.org.
It's on our Facebook page. So if and you on just the... look up NDLON on Facebook, all of that information is right there.
And we'll post all of those links, including the phone number for ICE, on our website later today. Olga, thank you so much for joining us and for the work
that you do on behalf
of immigrants.
Thank you. And the fight continues. We're not going anywhere.
Olga Tomchin is my guest. She is the Deportation Defense Coordinator and Staff Attorney for the National Day Labor Organizing Network, and she's been working directly on Myra Machado's case. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/RUWithSonali.